factors that can regulate glucose transporter activity. And I want to summarize some work that we've done to give an overall picture. So we've heard today that RDCVF stimulates glucose uptake and aerobic metabolism in cones via a GLUT1-basogen-1 interaction. I want to talk about factors that we've found are important. You've heard glucose transporter oligomeric state, but also GLUT1 activity is affected by cellular metabolic status. And this influences both the activity of the protein at the cell membrane and in specific cells, the trafficking of glucose transporters between intracellular domains and the plasma membrane. GLUT1 is a member of a family of facilitative glucose transporters, 14 in humans, and it's a member of the first clade. And you can see it's highly expressed in the cardiovascular system, the nervous system almost exclusively in astrocytes, and in photoreceptors. GLUT3 is the neuronal glucose transporter, and I will mention GLUT4, which is found in muscle and fat. So this is a topography of the glucose transport protein, GLUT1. There are 12 membrane-spanning domains. N and C termini face the cytoplasm, and the first six transmembrane domains are connected to the last six through a long intracellular loop. A student in my lab has modeled the GLUT1 structure onto the bacterial xylee crystal structure, and you can see we're looking at the transporter normal to the plane of the bilayer, shown by these yellow lines. This is the transporter in a configuration presenting a sugar binding site to the cytoplasm. If we now flip that 90 degrees so that we're now inside the cell, looking up at the membrane, you can see here's the sugar binding groove, and that the C-terminal half of the protein is a beautiful image rotated 180 degrees of the N-terminal half. In fact, experts, genomics experts, believe this protein is actually the result of a gene duplication of a six transmembrane domain protein. I'm going to tell you what we've found. Transmembrane domain 9 is vitally important in the oligomerization of the transporter. Transmembrane domain 6 controls the activity of the protein in a very special way. And this in part is influenced by ATP binding to the protein, which seems to emphasize the impact of transmembrane domain 6. And it's reversed by glucose binding to a number of transmembrane domains, which seems to release the transporter from control by transmembrane domain 6. So let's talk about oligomeric structure of the protein. We know, based on functional and our own immunoprecipitation studies, that GLUT1 and GLUT3, when expressed in the same cells, do not heterooligomerize. But if we take transmembrane domain 9 from GLUT1 and place it into GLUT3, I'll show you, these form heterocomplexes. Similarly, if we take transmembrane domain 9 from GLUT3 and put it into GLUT1, it prevents these two proteins from forming a large tetrameric complex. Here's some non-denaturing chromatography studies. This is purified dimeric GLUT1, purified in the presence of reductant. And you see most of the protein runs on size exclusion. Chromatography is a dimer. Whereas if we purify GLUT1 from human blood cells in the absence of reductant, most of it resolves as a tetramer. This is GLUT1 isolated from HEC cells, and you can see there's a mixture of tetramer and dimer. But if we take GLUT3 expressed in these cells, it's mostly dimeric. Then if we take transmembrane domain 9 from GLUT3 and put it into GLUT1, the profile is shifted to dimers and possibly monomers. And if we take transmembrane domain 9 from GLUT1 and put it into GLUT3, the profile moves largely towards tetramers. And there's a profound impact on function. So this is activity of the glucose transporters expressed in HEC cells as a function of the sugar concentration. This is 2-deoxyglucose. This is wild-type GLUT1, the transport rates have been normalized for cell surface expression of protein. This is GLUT1 with transmembrane domain 9 from GLUT3. And I'm getting a funny sound from my computer, so I'll turn that off. So clearly, the tetramer has more activity than the dimer. Now, if you do freeze fracture EM of the glucose transporter, this is what we find with the reduced transporter. This is what we see with non-reduced transporter. It's a 10 nanometer particle. This would be the size of a GLUT1 monomer. Now, we know that the transporter, each subunit isomerizes between two states. The kineticists call this the E2 state, presenting a sugar binding site to the exterior of the cell. When sugar binds, there's a conformational change in which the transporter is now in the E1 state, presenting a sugar binding site to the cytoplasm. Our studies tell us that this tetramer actually comprises four subunits in which two, if two present the E2 state, presenting a sugar binding site to the outside, the other two must be presenting sugar binding sites to the interior of the cell. So if we slice across the dimer, what happens is a sugar binds, this E2 undergoes the E2 to E1 conformation, and this beast undergoes the reverse conformational change. And if I let it go, you'll see the reverse conformational change again. Now, why does this confer a catalytic advantage? Well, as you've seen, in order for transport to occur, E2 must undergo the E2 to E1 conformational change. The first step we've measured in reduced glucose transporter, and binding and translocation of sugar and release inside the cell takes only 2 milliseconds at room temperature. But in order for the cycle of transport to be completed, E1 must relax back to the E2 state. And this takes 200 milliseconds at 10 degrees centigrade. So clearly, this is the rate limiting step. But what does the tetramer do? Each dimer of the tetramer couples translocation through one subunit, the green one, to the regeneration of another or relaxation of the adjacent subunit. So it takes us twice as much transporter to accomplish this, but potentially it could be 100, each subunit could be 100 times faster. We think that's the explanation for that. Now, as you recall, transmembrane domain 9 is one of these external or scaffold transmembranes, and the sequence difference between GLUT1 and GLUT3 all maps to one surface, and it's a surface that's exposed to the lipid bilayer. So we think that like glycoporin, which forms these very tight, high-affinity dimeric structures in the membrane, this surface could be acting rather like Velcro to hold complexes of transporter together. And of course, this would be another site for potential interaction with other membrane proteins, such as the rod-derived, the receptor for the RDCVF. I still can't wrap my tongue around that. Quickly, I'd like to tell you about other ways of regulating GLUT1. So as I've said, GLUT1 is the major transporter in red blood cells, the endothelial cells of the blood-brain barrier and the blood-retina barrier, and it's the major transporter present in astrocytes in the CNS. It's also very heavily expressed in smooth muscle cells. We know, based on our very early studies, that you can label purified glucose transporter with AZ-to-ATP. It runs as a very diffuse band in red cells because it's heterogeneously glycosylated. And if we raise the concentrations of AMP, ADP, and ATP, you can see we reduce the amount of photolabel incorporation into the transporter. Our studies also show that when the transporter is complexed with ATP, it is a very low capacity transporter. But if ATP dissociates due to its decrease through metabolism, or if AMP or ADP bind to the transporter becomes a high capacity transporter. I'll show you the data in this slide. This is sugar uptake in human red cells versus the external sugar concentration. These are ATP loaded red cells. These are ATP-free red cells. The ATP-loaded cells are low-capacity, high-affinity. The ATP-free red cells are high-capacity, low-affinity transporters. Now, a similar phenomenon occurs, and it's a kinetic phenomenon, but I believe, I don't know how it happens, but I believe these two phenomena are related. This is sugar uptake in human red blood cells in cells lacking intracellular sugar but containing ATP. And it's essentially the similar kinetics that you saw on the previous page. But if I were to preload these cells with 50 millimolar, a non-physiologic, it's a kinetic trick, you load them with 50 millimolar sugar, this is the kinetics of unidirectional sugar uptake. The transporter becomes a high-capacity, low-affinity transporter. Interestingly enough, GLUT4, the muscle and fat glucose transporter, the insulin-sensitive glucose transporter, does not show this phenomena. This is uptake in the absence of intracellular sugar. This is uptake in the presence of intracellular sugar. Using homology scanning mutagenesis again, we were able to express GLUT1 in hex cells, and we can show that uptake in cells lacking sugar is less than uptake in cells loaded with sugar. If we do the same experiment with GLUT4, you see two things. There's no transacceleration, but uptake in the absence of intracellular sugar is high. Now, if we do another set of experiments, this is simply the control. If we take GLUT1 and put transmembrane domain 6 from GLUT4 into GLUT1, then you can see that there's no transacceleration, but uniport or uptake in the absence of intracellular sugar is high. If we take GLUT4 and put transmembrane domain 6 from GLUT1 into GLUT4, now uniport is low and we see transacceleration. So somehow transmembrane domain 6 is suppressing uniport, but its suppression can be released when there's sugar inside the cell. So here's another cell type. These are avian red blood cells, which express GLUT1. They're unusual because they're nucleated and control and contain mitochondria. Here's uniport uptake and exchange uptake in these cells under normal conditions. If we metabolically deplete them so that intracellular ATP is reduced, you can see that both exchange and exchange is unaffected by metabolic depletion. So it's almost as if metabolic stress stimulates transport to the same extent as intracellular sugar. And we see the same for exit. So what have transacceleration and ATP regulation of glucose transport in common? Both are observed in GLUT1 and it turns out GLUT3. And under these conditions, uniport is less than exchange, and uniport is inhibited by ATP and exchange transport is not. Neither is observed with GLUT2, the liver glucose transporter, or GLUT4, the insulin-sensitive glucose transporter, where uniport and exchange occur at the same rate, and neither uniport nor exchange are inhibited by ATP. Thus, transmembrane domain 6 from GLUT1 or GLUT3 restore transacceleration to GLUTs 2 and 4 by suppressing uniport, and the reverse is true for transmembrane domain 6 from GLUT2 or GLUT4. They prevent transacceleration by desuppressing uniport. So does this mean that glucose binding to and ATP dissociation from GLUTs 1 and GLUT3 promote the same functional states? Well, we've looked by mass spectrometry to find out what structural changes are promoted in GLUT1 upon ATP binding. And if we use EDC, which is a zero-length crosslinker, it crosslinks salt bridges present in proteins. So we're crosslinking lysines and glutamates, or lysines and aspartates. We find 6 salt bridges within the cytoplasmic loop in GLUT1. We also know, based on a peptide mapping, that this is the peptide somewhere in here. This is the peptide that contains the covalently labeled azido, or the photolabeled azido ATP, when we UV irradiate the protein in the presence of this compound. If we add ATP to the transporter and do cross-linking, we lose one of these cross-links, but now we cross-link this lysine to this glutamate in the carboxy terminus. What we don't know is whether it's cross-linked within the same subunit or between adjacent subunits in the complex. What we think is happening is, in the absence of ATP, the C-terminus does not interact with the middle loop, so the transporter undergoes its E2, E1 conformational changes in the predictable way. But when ATP binds, now there's a conformational change bringing the C-terminus in close proximity to the middle loop. And during a transport cycle, there's a lower probability of a sugar, once it moves through this channel, from being released into the cytoplasm, a higher probability of it being recycled to the outside. So there's a net reduction in sugar uptake. So does this mean then we can use small molecules to regulate glucose transport? We know that these compounds mimic the action of ATP on glucose transport. These are non-hydrolyzable ATP analogs, and caffeine is an incredibly good inhibitor of transport. Fortunately, at millimolar levels, so the caffeine we've all had today, that's micromolar, we're okay, okay? But there are ATP antagonists. It turns out that AMP and ADP do not directly inhibit glucose transport, but they serve as competitive antagonists of ATP inhibition of transport. And I'm going to show you very briefly, time permitting, that a compound C, an inhibitor of AMP-dependent protein kinase, is also an ATP antagonist. And some of the classic inhibitors of transport at very, very low concentrations actually stimulate GLUT1. So we're screening a 1.5 million small molecule library at the moment using a glucose sensor to measure sugar transport in red cell ghosts for activators and inhibitors of glucose transport. They may actually be useful to those in those conditions where transport stimulation could help patients. And we've also been able to model these sugars and modifying compounds into GLUT1. I made this picture at Christmas time, so the green and the red and everything sort of looks typical. So here's ATP in red, caffeine in blue, and cytochalasin B, a transport inhibitor, modeled into the E1 conformation of the transporter. We know that ATP and caffeine, they show steric overlap and they compete with one another for binding. Caffeine and cytochalasin B show a small amount of steric overlap in this modeling, and they too compete with one another for binding in reality. These two molecules, ATP and cytochalasin B, do not compete for binding. We hope to map all of these binding sites into the protein. Now, do I have time? 2 minutes? I want to talk about regulation of transport activity by membrane trafficking, because although it isn't directly relevant to what we heard this afternoon about levels of GLUT1 in cone membranes, I believe it's actually very important at the blood tissue barrier. So you know that in skeletal muscle and white fat, insulin regulates glucose transport. And this is the way it was proposed to work many years ago, and all of the experimental data support the hypothesis. There's a large pool of intracellular glucose transporters, they're GLUT4, and when insulin binds to its receptor after release due to a meal, intracellular GLUT4 translocates to the plasma membrane, fuses, increasing the amount of transporter at the cell surface, which lowers blood glucose. Insulin levels fall, it dissociates from its receptor, and the transporter is re-internalized for another signal from insulin. Glucose transport in muscle is also stimulated by contractile activity. And in fact, Some studies show that AMPK activation by phosphorylation stimulates translocation. Other studies suggest that AMPK phosphorylation inhibits reinternalization of protein. We're not sure what the difference for these different results is, whether it's different tissues, different hands, but nevertheless, they both have been observed. So we've looked at sugar transport in a murine cell line of the blood-brain barrier. These are BEN3 cells. They're not perfect, they're immortalized cells, but it's easier than trying to create primary cultures from cerebral microvascular cells. They form confluent monolayers in culture. They express tight junction proteins. They express largely GLUT1, and the transporter, the mouse transporter, shares 97% homology with GLUT1. If we measure sugar uptake in these endothelial cells as a function of concentration, we see nice Michaelis-Menten kinetics. If we glucose deprive the cells or treat the cells with an AMPK agonist, ICAR, you see a modest stimulation of sugar uptake. If we metabolically deplete the cells with cyanide, an inhibitor of oxidative metabolism, we see a robust stimulation of sugar uptake. This is actually very rapidly reversible. Other inhibitors like FCCP, which actually dissipate the proton gradient across the inner mitochondrial membrane, you can wash the cells forever. It never reverses at all. When we cell surface label glucose transporters in the cell, we can see that cyanide produces a small but reproducible increase in GLUT1 at the cell surface, whereas the sodium-potassium ATPase levels are unchanged. If we transfect these mouse cells with human GLUT1, we see, to improve our signal to noise, we see a more robust stimulation in cell surface GLUT1 levels. And if we do immunohistochemistry, where we've labeled cells, the nuclei, the mitochondria, and glucose transporters, shown with Alexa-488, labeled antibody, you can see that when we poison the cells, these are non-permeabilized cells, there's a robust increase in the amount of cell surface glucose transporter. We know that the effect of metabolic poisons and glucose deprivation on sugar uptake can be inhibited by compound C, an antagonist of AMPK, but notice basal sugar transport is stimulated by compound C. If we knock down the alpha-1 and alpha-2 subunits of AMPK by siRNA, we can block the effects of glucose depletion, ICAR treatment, KCN, and FCCP, but the small effect in this case of compound C is unaffected. We've also looked at trafficking of GLUT1 into the cell. So the idea is you take these BEN3 cells at 4 degrees centigrade, you biotinylate all of the cell surface proteins with a reducible biotinylation probe. It reacts with primary amines. You then wash everything away, you warm the cells up to 37 degrees, and let the cells internalize any cell surface proteins that may be present. Then you cool them again, strip off any biotin left at the cell surface, and see how much is now inside the cell and protected from the external reductant by streptavidin purification and immunoblotting. And we can see with the sodium-potassium ATPase, there's a lot there at zero time, but as soon as we treat with TCEP at 37 degrees, it all disappears. Nothing is internalized at all. Transferrin receptor is internalized, and a small amount of glucose transporter is internalized. This is the total amount shown below. So if we actually quantitate these, see no sodium-potassium ATPase is internalized. A tiny amount, about 4-5% of GLUT1 is internalized. Transferrin just keeps turning over in these cells. So we think there's very little internalization of GLUT1. Therefore, we believe, we haven't completed the experiments yet, that the effect of metabolic depletion on cell surface GLUT1 levels must be due to externalization of intracellular GLUT1. Lot 1. So here's our model for sugar transport regulation in blood-brain barrier cells. Here's the plasma membrane. There's a small amount of GLUT1 at the cell surface, that intracellular pool of GLUT1. Glucose is internalized, generates ATP, either anaerobically or aerobically. But that ATP, when it's used, also generates, leads to AMP production, which we can exacerbate or increase by treating either with cyanide, which blocks ATP production oxidatively, or FCCP stimulates ATP consumption. We can also increase AMP levels by blocking glucose uptake through hypoglycemia. Increased AMPK levels result in the phosphorylation, AMP levels result in the phosphorylation of AMPK, or ICAO will stimulate this, leading to translocation of intracellular GLUT1 to the cell surface. We can inhibit this effect with compound C or by AMPK knockdown. But intracellular ATP will directly antagonize or inhibit the activity of cell surface glucose transporters. But we think compound C can also directly antagonize ATP binding to the glucose transporter and relieve it from tonic inhibition. So there's a very, very complex interplay. This process might not be important in cones, but I believe this process could be, as well as oligomeric changes in oligomeric state. But I think this process could be very important at blood tissue barriers, such as the blood retina barrier. So these are the people who've done most of the work, and I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have at this time.